Let me just check to make sure that I guess everything is working. Okay. Well, let's begin by indicating that today is March 29th, 2007, and this is Jim Boning talking to Dr. Alan Debus at his home in Deerfield, Illinois. I know you were born on the 16th of August in 1926. Could you tell me just a little bit about your parents and your and you were born here in Chicago, too?
I was born in Chicago, yes, and brought up in the northern suburbs. My father was in the set-up paper box business. He had a factory on the north side of Chicago, Modern Boxes. And my grandfather had also been in the set-up paper box business. And we lived in Evanston when I was brought up, moved to Glenview. And my parents moved to Northfield, which is just a little bit south of here. And well, what else would you like to know?
Do you have any siblings?
No.
You were an only child.
Mm-hmm.
And where did you get your early schooling?
Well, in Evanston.
Okay.
At the Orrington School for Grammar School, and then Evanston High School. And I graduated from high school in 1944, and I had a scholarship to go to an engineering school in southern Indiana. And I thought, well, I'll be in the Army in a matter of weeks. So I'd rather stay at home. And I made a last-minute application to engineering at Northwestern and was accepted right away and went right into college.
Was that school Rose Holman? What was the engineering school in southern Indiana?
I think that was it.
Rose Holman in Terre Haute.
That sounds right. I really don't remember exactly. I had something like Rensselaer in my mind, but that's in New York.
Right.
Yeah, that sounds like it.
Rose Holman was a fine engineering school, and it was in Terre Haute, which is in the southern part of the state.
Yeah.
When you were in high school, did you have any teachers who had an influence on you, or anyone else who had an influence on you?
Yeah, I had two teachers. One of them was Emma Rogers. I took, I think, 2 years of courses from her, American history and world history. And also Mr. Anderson, who taught chemistry. Both of them were excellent teachers. I should add a third one, too. Oh, heavens, what was his name? Well, I don't remember. There was an older gentleman who taught modern European history. I took my senior year. And the name will come to me later, probably, but I don't remember right now.
And what attracted you to engineering?
Well, it was chemical engineering.
Okay.
That attracted me, but also the fact that this was wartime, and this was a practical area, and something where I could do some good. I really didn't want to go into business because I never felt that I was a businessman in the sense that my father and grandfather were. And for this this reason, I thought that combining engineering with chemistry made a great deal of sense, especially at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And now in time, I moved out of that. I don't know if you want me to go on with this.
Oh, yes. No, that's fine.
But The one thing I really disliked about engineering at Northwestern was the fact that it was a condensed program, not necessarily because of the war, although that might have been part of it, because somehow I felt that engineering was sort of like medical school. You had an awful lot to take and just a limited amount of time. And it was, I think I was into the end of my sophomore, even the beginning of my junior year, that I had an elective. And I took a course in history from someone who was very influential on me also, John Murray, who taught Renaissance and Reformation history. And he was really a great teacher. And John really got me interested in what he was teaching. I wish I could say every teacher I've had. but he did.
Was there any reason why you selected that particular course? When
it was about the only one that was available out of
history. Okay. Because for an engineer to take a Renaissance history course is sort of as an elective.
Although I had an interest in early history anyway.
Okay.
I remember once in high school, we had an English teacher who wanted all the students to talk on something as part of an assignment. And I decided to talk on the history of ancient Egypt. And I took up the whole hour. I think I bored everyone to death.
So you escaped the draft. You were not drafted.
I was not drafted, no. I was, that was another strange thing. I was continually being reclassified. At one time, I was 4F. I think at the end, I was 4L. It's because of my eyesight. But another time I was 1AL, another time I was 4AL. I don't know what 4AL is. I never knew another person who had that. But yeah, I escaped it. I got through Northwestern. I went every quarter and was out in 3 years. At the end of that time, John Murray took a position at Indiana University, and he offered me an assistantship. So I went down there.
And at this point, you were moving out of engineering.
Well, as a matter of fact, I had moved from chemical engineering to a chemistry major.
Oh, okay.
So my Northwestern degree is in chemistry.
In chemistry. Okay.
It's a BS in chemistry, and I had almost a second major in history by the time I graduated. So I was really moving towards the history of chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
Although I didn't know it.
Well, that's what I would like to get into, how you made that move from a chemistry major, and I think you worked at Abbott Laboratories as a chemist, is that correct?
Yeah, well, that's quite a bit later.
Okay. So I'm intrigued about how all this fits together. Why don't you just take us through it?
All right. I was John Murray's assistant at Indiana in the fall of 1947. And he was a very good teacher, especially in seminars. And we would try to choose topics that made sense. And he gave a seminar in Tudor history 1 year and in Stuart history another year. Oh, there's a deer. Oh, no, it's a little girl. We see deer. Sorry, every time I see something move, I think it's a deer.
We got deer in the backyard all the time. They eat my flowers.
Anyway, when I was... getting ready to prepare my master's thesis, he said, Now, don't be foolish. Don't write another thesis on Tudor political history or something like that. You're a chemist. So do something on chemistry in the period we were dealing with. And he said, here, there's a journal, Isis. Take a look at that. So I started looking at Isis. And in the end, I wrote a thesis on Robert Boyle. And by that time, I was into the history of science, really.
Did Indiana have a history of science program?
No. No, it was really no field whatsoever. Indiana did get into the history of science. First, I think, by inviting George Sarton to give a series of lectures there on Renaissance history. But that was after my time. It was one of the last things he did. And then, of course, a little after that, Marie Boas and Rupert Hall went there again. I didn't know them. It was after my time. Anyway, I graduated, was out of money. My parents, I don't think they wanted to support me anymore. I went to work for my father for a year, selling boxes. And then I went back to get a master's degree in chemistry. And that's where I met my wife.
Oh, are you a chemist?
Yes.
Okay. And you went back to Northwestern?
No, Indiana.
You were still at Indiana?
Yeah.
Okay.
Went back to Indiana. And, we were both, towards the end of getting our master's degrees in chemistry, I had one more course to take, I think, to finish the coursework. And we decided to get married. So we got married in in August 1951, and got married in Miami. Her parents came from San Juan, and mine came from Chicago. And for a honeymoon, we drove back to Chicago. I had $200. See, money went a lot further then. Anyway, we didn't have a job or anything, any prospects of a job.
And neither of you got a degree then, or did you get your degree?
No, I didn't finish it.
So neither of you finished your degree?
No, I had my master's degree in history.
History, but you didn't finish the degree in chemistry.
No. After we got back to Chicago, we started looking for jobs in the newspaper. And we checked out several places, and finally, one of them was Abbott Laboratories in North Chicago, and it was a job for a woman. That's how you did it, wasn't it, or did I go in first?
You went to interview.
I went first, or you went first?
You went first.
I went first. They said they wanted a woman. So she went, she got the job, and she told them that I needed a job too, and there was a job available over in development, and I took that, so we both got jobs there, and I worked in research and development for 5 years.
Where was your job?
Microanalytical chemist. Our division was in charge making sure that the new products that the other chemists brought were such carbon, oxygen, nitrogen, using a nice microanalytical balance, little platinum, ditches and to know, so to make sure that the new drugs were where they're supposed to be. And from there, then it went to Alan's part to if there were approved for him to get new methods of making them.
5 years, was history still in the back of your mind all of this time?
No, not at first. Although I always had an interest in it, and I belonged to they had a history club that had the laboratories. I went to that, and I spoke there. We started in 51, and by 53, I was getting a bit tired. It seemed as though, unless you had a PhD in chemistry, you would always just be handed down somebody else's project to work on. And that was all right. I got a couple of patents out of my work, but still, you didn't initiate anything really. Mm-hmm.
Novocaine, new production of Novocaine products.
That was a good one. Then again, you do that and you only get a dollar.
That's true.
Anyway, in 53, we thought maybe we should go back and get a PhD. And I was interested in the history of science. Had been all along, more or less. And went up to Madison and spoke to Marshall Claggett. In fact, I was introduced to all of the members of the department there. And it looked interesting, but the living conditions for graduate students in Madison at that time were really not very good. You had to go out in the town and have oil heating stoves and all. And we thought this was just a bit too hard to deal with. And so we went back and bought a new Buick.
That was in 53,
yeah.
You said?
You had and a baby by then, too?
Yeah, no, afterwards. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had a Buick and a baby. we continued at Abbott Laboratories. Rooney stopped working after the baby was born. It just seemed as though it was pretty difficult to get anywhere. I had a good friend who was, Southern was his name, head of the library at the laboratories. And he offered to take me and put me in the library, but even that wasn't really what I wanted. And so we finally started looking at history of science programs. There were only three to speak of at the time. Bernard Cohen was at Harvard, and Marshall Claggett was at Wisconsin, and Henry Gerlach was at Cornell. Mm. None of them were really interested in exactly what I wanted to do, which is certainly not too surprising. We finally decided on Harvard. I was admitted to all of the programs, and so we just sort of packed up and left.
And you were working as a physical chemist with a professor.
Well, you mean at Harvard? Mm-hmm. I got an assistantship after I got there, but that was the year after I started. Mm-hmm.
So what did you do for financial support with the baby?
Well, my grandfather had died, and he left some money, and we were able to get started there. later on, my parents helped somewhat. Of course, the money you got in fellowships in those days, very, very little. I don't remember how much it was at Harvard, but I do remember that when I was John Murray's assistant at Indiana, it was $600 for the year.
The year, wow.
So it really wasn't enough to take you anywhere. Of course, the tuition and cost of living was much, much less than it is today.
So that was 56 that you went to Harvard?
Yeah.
And who did you work for then? Did you find someone to mentor what you wanted to do?
No.
Okay.
Only in a roundabout way, but not at Harvard. Technically, the my dissertation advisor, chief, whatever, was Bernard Cohen. There were hardly any people there, and you more or less had to choose your own topic and do it largely on your own. I had three fields when I had my oral examination. That was history of science, and Tudor Stuart history, and medieval history. And I thought it was interesting, the orals were held at the house of Wilbur K. Jordan, who was the president of Radcliffe University, and he was on the Harvard History Department program. But there really was no one who was doing history of chemistry. Leonard K. Nash of the chemistry department mm-hmm. had an interest in the field, but his interests were really more in the philosophy of science than the history of chemistry. Awfully nice fellow. He's still alive, I believe.
Is he really?
I think so.
Boy. What about Conant? Did you interact?
Conant was no longer involved in the program.
Okay.
And in fact, I don't remember seeing him once on the Harvard campus.
So this was all done within the history department?
Well, no. The history of science was sort of a semi-autonomous unit. And Cohen was in charge of me, although I didn't see him very often. I always liked Cohen, but he was kind of aloof. And I don't think he really wanted to be bothered an awful lot by the students, especially students who weren't working in an area close to his own interests. I hope I'm not doing him an injustice, but
I like him and his wife.
I like him too.
Used to have, and they have seminars, invite the wives.
Oh, okay.
And his wife was very nice because when I had a baby, told me where to take him to the doctors. She was very helpful, very nice person.
But when Cohen was working in his office in Widener 189, he really didn't want to be bothered. So you didn't bother him. Or if you did, you could get in.
Well, I was going to ask you what kind of a person he was, but I think you've just told me. So, what about coursework? Was there any coursework, and were there courses in the history of science?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Cohen gave a one-year survey of the history of science, which I think was very useful and very influential, probably. He wrote a short history of physics and scientific revolution or something. It's a nice little paperback that I think was the basis of his lectures. But in addition to that, each year he gave a two-semester seminar in the history of physics, primarily. He was very interested in motion, Galileo, and of course Isaac Newton.
Your oral, though, sounds like a tour de force, if you had those three areas in which you were, going to be quizzed. Was your panel mostly historians?
Two historians, and of course Cohen was there, that's three. And I think that Leonard Nash was there also.
Okay.
Taylor was the medievalist. I had taken his course in medieval intellectual history.
And what was your thesis on?
The thesis was on the English Paracelsians.
Okay, which was your first book?
Yes.
Okay. Had you pretty well thought out by this time what your career was going to be and what you were going to pursue?
Well, I was very much interested in the Paracelsians, and when I was doing research, the preliminary research on the dissertation, I ran into a 1935 multi-part article by Walter Pago. What's the exact title? I don't even remember the exact title, but it dealt with the background to biology in the 17th century, and he took up all of these people that I had not seen much of before, and were never mentioned in other courses or books, mostly the more mystical figures of the period, and I became very interested in Robert Fludd, for instance. I had been interested in Paracelsus earlier, but Pavel's work was especially interesting to me. And there was this opportunity to apply for what was a Social Science Research Council, Fulbright, various things. I applied for a number of scholarships, and I don't think you were too happy about it at the beginning. But you know, in the 50s, students weren't commonly going off to Europe to study. And of course we were married and had a baby. In fact, by the time we went, we had two. And that wasn't very usual either. So anyway, I applied, and I got the Fulbright, and then I got a supplementary one, I think, from a Social Science Research Council. And we went to England. Before leaving, I wrote Walter Pavel, expressed my interest in his work, and he said, by all means, come and see me.